Hey there, welcome to Broadcast to Post. I'm Jeff Sengpiel, CTO at Keycode Media. This is the show where we interview leaders and experts in the AV, broadcast, and post-production spaces. We're giving you the inside tips to grow your media workflows and business today. Sounds good. Thanks, Mike. I also want to welcome the members of the Hollywood Beer Association who are here today. Yeah, it's always good to have the HBA.
Your little hoodie.
There we go. We got the yodel. So let's kick it off, and we'll start with ladies first. The first question, tell us a little bit about you, your company, your department. How do you feel the approach to post-production and workflow is evolving? Morgan?
Yeah, great. Thanks so much for having me. And apologies, I'm here filling in for Carl Soule. But I'm part of our strategic development team here at Adobe. And effectively what we do is we sit between our product and engineering teams and our end user clients specific to long form video and episodic production and really help adapt a lot of their bespoke workflows into the Adobe ecosystem. So we're not in sales necessarily, we're really just driving usage of Creative Cloud products. And I think, we've had some great announcements over the last 7 months or so with the acquisition of Frame.io. And I think, prior to joining Adobe, I was a little bit more on the physical production side, building large-scale LED infrastructure and green screen stage builds for simulcam work. And a lot of the themes that I was starting to notice, particularly as the pandemic, the last 2 years of the pandemic have really kind of thrown everything off its axis, is that the paradigm of how we think about the traditional factory line of production in general and how movies are made is just fundamentally shifting in general. Post-production is now getting re-injected more and more into pre-production, which puts an even bigger emphasis around team collaboration and having to have a core central repository for where all of that onset metadata lives. So I'd say, it was already kind of beginning to shift before the pandemic, but particularly in the last 2 years, what we have noticed is that emphasis for team collaboration has really just skyrocketed, regardless of whether or not, you're someone who works on set or you're, a post supervisor, a VFX artist, you name it. We need access to more people.
Awesome. Larry, same question for you. Tell us a little bit about what's going on, and how do you feel stuff's evolving?
How is stuff evolving?
That's the difficult question.
Very quickly. So MTI is a full-service post-production company in Hollywood. We have basically four lines of business. We do episodic television. We do film restoration. We also do what's called remastering. We have a remote center, which I'll discuss in a moment. And we also develop software. That's a lot, isn't it? That's why I'm 22, by the way. So, certainly the pandemic has changed everything. We went from having full service in facility to remote editing to remote review. And that all happened as a result of the pandemic. It was about July of 2 years ago where the pandemic was in full blaze, and our clients were freaking out because they couldn't get their editors to work at all. And they couldn't go to the studios, they couldn't go to anything on premises. So we did a little pivot and decided to, at the time when everything was sinking, we decided to spend $1 million and bought a whole bunch of Nexuses, bought a whole bunch of Avid licenses, servers, etc., and built within literally, I think it was 8 to 10 weeks from scratch, a 2,000 square foot facility. And we now have 120 editors and assistants working on our private cloud. You could ask, why did you go private? Why didn't you go to the, go somewhere else like the cloud? And I said, well, I don't think we'll make as much money, that's why. And that's really the bottom line. It really became an economic decision where we could monetize what we have over time and be profitable, or give all the money to AWS. So that's really the bottom line. In terms of review and client review, there's all kinds of technologies out there now that are wonderful. We chose to go with Teradek. You probably have heard of it. They have a great application for review, and it does HDR and it does SDR, but it's very common now for a review to happen off premises, and very few customers are actually coming to the facility, which really begs the question as to why I have 16,000 square feet at this point. So anyway, that's our story, more or less.
Awesome, thank you. Thank you, Larry. Jay-Z, how do you feel post-workflow and production itself is evolving?
Housekeeping first, we have four seats in the front, if somebody wants to sit here. And now, how about I feel about it? I also want to introduce Larry Chernoff as Lifetime Achievement Award winner for an HPA award. Somewhat, that's my title. Excuse my French.
It didn't cost me much either, I have to
say. Exactly.
Just a lifetime.
Just a lifetime. So the HPA, actually, we all lost 2 years in the last 2 years during this global pandemic. And during that time, I spent a lot of time on HPA project. And there I want to share a funny story about Adobe and the cloud. It was actually Amazon who asked me in 2019, what's the most complicated, furthest distanced location we could make a cloud-based project in? And I said, Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. Okay, let's go for it. So we contacted the guys there, and there is a small movie-making community there. And then the pandemic happens, and all the plans, they change. It turned out that 3 Mongolians were in London, and all the other Mongolians were still in Mongolia. So we decided to do short movies around the world, shoot the movie. We still need light and the camera and the actors, but from there on, put everything in the cloud and ask vendors around the world to pick up the content from the cloud and do dailies, editing, sound mixing, VFX, everything in the cloud. So London started first, and therefore collaboration, we used Frame.io there very successfully. And then we went to Mongolia, and at the time, Frame.io and Adobe were not partnered yet, and we used some other tools, and it didn't work out for them, and the Mongolians begged me, can we please use Frame.io in Ulaanbaatar as well? And we said, no, you are with Adobe now. You have to use this other tool. I forgot the name, obviously. And the Mongolians always speak very with deep voices, because you're more manly when you speak with a deep voice. So they say, Jay-Z, we need Frame.io. And so it was so funny that then a year later, you came together with Frame.io, so well deserved. So this was an amazing project. We made 6 movies around the world, and the Mongolian one actually did play at the Cannes Film Festival as well. Tangent, the one we made with Mandy Walker in Brisbane, won the ACS Award, the Australian Society of Cinematographers, and the HPA this year will show this movies as well. So we did a lot of work post-producing shorts in the cloud in the last 2 years. And now we are kind of getting back to normal. So it's all good to see you here. You all look good today. You look better than on Zoom, by the way. It feels to me whatever we learned in the last 2 years working in the cloud, we keep the good parts, but go still a little bit back to our normal life, meeting in person, but we were forced to learn so many amazing new tools, and now is the time that we filter it out a little bit. This we keep, and this we go back to normal. So it's an interesting time. It's the time for growth now, 2022, I would say.
So Mongolian cloud, all you can post. Thanks, Jay-Z. One thing I've seen out there that's happened is I've seen rooms this size with 900 editing systems in them. Not a single human being that needs to be there. Racks at the end, that's your connection to the outside, but stacks of machines up to 10 years old in the middle. Just lots of air conditioning, lots of power, lots of networking. And you know, that's in Burbank and Hollywood. So there has been that little fundamental change that has brought an evolution to this. I also know people from my past who, you know, they've always worked in Hollywood. They're not here anymore. Still working on the same shows, But, you know, one guy I know who's lead AE on one of the reality shows, he lives outside of Grand Rapids now, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and he just does the same work. So that genie's out of the bottle, but my question also that always pops up for me is, okay, where's this next gig going to come from? You're not running into people in the hallway. So let's get into recent projects. Larry, let's start with you. Anything really cool that you've worked on recently?
Well, they're all the same, honestly. I mean, there's nothing super cool about it. We support remote dailies through our application. We support, trying to think of a project that presented some unique aspect to it. Getting to this question of editing, we actually supported an editor in France, in Paris. And that was surprising because we thought that the latency would be way too much. And they approved it. They said, no, it's fine. So I was like, okay, wow. So that was cool. And we do have editors all over the country now. This is a very new phenomenon. But I really like what you said about, you know, meeting in the hall to get my next gig. That's really the truth of the matter. I mean, a lot of business happens because you happen to be local and you're involved one-to-one with people. But in terms of a very unique project, I would just simply say that almost every project we do today has some unique aspect to it, whether it's a location issue, a technology issue. We support Avids on PCs. Oh, good. Nobody reacted.
Like Windows?
At first, that was probably the most unique thing, is that we kept insisting that it had to be on PC. And the reason for that was simply the connectivity and the technical aspects of it. And what's interesting is that we actually got very little resistance, and I was surprised by it. There were a couple. We lost one editor completely because it wasn't on a Mac. But fuck him. That's what I said at the time. Fuck him. There's millions of editors out there. But the fact of the matter is that that was probably the one hurdle that we thought we were going to have to jump. And it just didn't seem to present as big a problem as we thought. So and besides which, we were able to put our Cortex technology on the PCs, which sped up. Oh, here's the good thing. I got one for you. So when I started in this business, I was an assistant editor in the film business, I should say. And one of the things that's always been dear to my heart are assistant editors, because I know what they go through, especially at 6 o'clock when they get the turnover and they have to do all these files for the rest of the world. Okay, that is the director, the producer, the showrunner, whoever. And they have to post to Pix or to Frame.io or to whatever. And normally out of the Avid, it's one at a time and it takes hours for everything to happen. So the overtime, the lack of sleep by the assistants goes till 11, 12 o'clock at night every day, literally. So we decided to put our software on there. And I'll just give you one metric that I think is interesting. You can take a same source out of the Avid, put it into Cortex, and within literally 30 minutes have every file you could possibly want. So in addition to this remote technology helping to facilitate the process, it's actually improved people's lives. Because what it's done is it's given them back their families, it's given back their children. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people, you've saved my life, even though you sacrificed my overtime. So that's my, I think, best story of the day.
Awesome. Morgan, any cool projects that you've been involved with lately? I mean, you're with the manufacturer, so it might be a little difficult there.
Yeah, what vertical do you want to talk about? I think with live sports, I think camera to cloud is really getting to a critical mass point where we have some NBA teams that are doing what we're now calling court to cloud, where they're posting direct from the court clips into Twitter in less than 3.5 minutes. So I don't really know of another solution around there other than maybe an iPhone direct to Instagram Live that can offer that sort of content velocity. Beyond that, I think one of the other things that we've noticed, particularly with indie filmmakers, is they're taking a lot more risks. You know, we have some folks that are producing indie films where we have an editor in France as well, with an AE in New York and another AE in LA. And, you know, in the past, that probably would have been, some folks might have scrunched their nose at that a little bit. But again, today, I think the pandemic has really just kind of forced a lot of people to make do with what they've got. And it's actually ended up working out pretty well. You know, I think what I'm sensing the next 12 to 18 months is going to look like are more of those instances, but on a larger scale with, you know, higher budget production. But I think, you know, Camera to Cloud unlocks quite a bit of that. But I also just think, you know, the maturity of a lot of the collaboration tools that exist out there today are really helping to drive a lot of that as well.
It's all evolving, right?
Yeah.
Everything into Zoom. JC, any cool projects other than what you already talked about?
Other than the Mongolians? Yeah, so I work for Barco now, and what nobody knows is Barco stands for Belgium American Radio Company. It's like an eye opener. Nobody knows about that name. But these are the guys who build large screen projection systems. And the cool project I'm working on now is giving theater owners a normal, affordable HDR projector for the theater. So all of us bought amazing monitors in the last 2 years or have a home projection system. I mean, this monitor would look amazing at home. But when you go to a large screen theater with HDR projection, it has deeper blacks, but also better highlights. It will tell you with the Dolby Atmos sound or Barco Aero Max sound, it will tell you right away that you still need to go to the cinema. And the cinemas really suffered in the last 2 years, obviously. So I'm pleased that I can help now the theaters to have amazing premium screens coming up. So I'm working at the moment on converting existing movies into theatrical HDR or new movies into theatrical HDR, and also helping at the moment independent filmmakers to get their movies converted for an HDR theater. At the moment, our projectors are prototypes only, and they will hit the market next year. So the theaters will have the opportunity to have more premium screens available to get them into the theater. And it is pleasing to see an image again every day on a large screen. And I have the feeling that this presentation is very Avid heavy for some reason. So it looks like many movies are shot or are edited on the Avid, but all the independent filmmakers edit on Adobe. So it feels like that the younger generation goes this way and the existing talent is that way. So I'm looking forward to see what happens in the future there, who wins the race. And then imaging science, the main part of imaging science is to fix legal to extended range video level issues. So that's a lifesaver. It's amazing that we still work on that in 2022. The next hurdle is HDMI cables. That's the biggest curse of our industry. So there's like two machines which talk to each other via HDMI cable and you have no influence. So it's like the race of the machines. And if you saw the movie, it's not a good thing to give machines control. I should put on a fake German accent and battle the machines, perhaps. Yeah. What is also very interesting is the matrix to convert a 422 signal into a 444 signal. You can do a 709 matrix or a Rec 2020 matrix. That's the new thing we did throw into the ring. It didn't hit you yet, perhaps too often, but it will also come in the future when you encode your material to transport it somewhere. You convert 444 into 422, and on the encoder, you have the option use this matrix or that matrix, and on the decoder, you have the option to do this matrix or that matrix. So the error rate is pretty high, and to get like playing the lottery and get it right, it's it's pretty difficult. So that's amazing that we have such a thing to deal with now. And talking about editorial base, it's still puzzling to me that editorial monitors are not calibrated. When you rent a whole editorial bay with five rooms, assistant editor, VFX editor, and main editor, the rental house says the monitor works if you can switch it on or off. And so that's really puzzling to me that they are not calibrated yet. So Larry and I, we had a discussion.
We calibrate.
I know Larry takes care of it. So Larry
do it personally.
Larry did introduce me to TerraDeck as well. And we had some good times with TerraDeck during the pandemic. So perhaps you're the only one who worries about calibration in editorial. Hands up, anybody else? Two, yes, three.
The other interesting
thing. How many nits are your projectors?
Oh, yes, 300 nits. So Dolby Vision is 108 nits, and we are 300 nits. Normal theater is 48 nits, so we are six times brighter. We have a light budget. We cannot do full screen 300 nits, but nobody looks at white pictures. We make a movie where people talk to each other. So we designed this 300 nits projector to be affordable to be... we are able to build many of them for an affordable price.
Is it laser?
It's a three laser projection system. Yeah. It also it's a green product in terms of energy saving. So statistically, it saves the theater owner $15,000 on electricity and cooling costs. It works with normal room cooling, so you don't need the roof exhaust anymore. You put your hands on, it's cool. So it's it's a future proof product.
It's cool. We'll do it all with freaking lasers.
Yeah.
That's the important thing though. People are going back to the theaters. I mean, Batman made a lot of money. The folks from that team will be here in this room after we're done. Doctor Strange has made a boatload of bank in the theaters. So people are willing to go back to those shared big screen experiences and making them better looking. That's going to
Is that true? I mean, show of hands. Who's been to the theater in the last month? That's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's better than I expected.
Yeah. And we're Angelenos and we're jaded, so and we usually have really good monitors at home. And
okay, who watched the movie? Hands. Okay.
Though the other interesting thing about monitors being calibrated is a lot of these remote systems don't even have that third monitor because we've just made do without it. So there's different solutions out there that have been coming along that give people that full edit bay experience back. So there's a couple over in the show zone that you can take a look at. This question actually kind of more gears to you, Larry. So we'll start with it because it's about upgrading equipment over recent years. So have you had the workflow change for the gear, or does the gear change because of the workflow?
I would say change because of the workflow. Yeah, I'll go back to the TerraDeck thing just because. Mm-hmm. So we have 10 color bays and edit bays, which is relatively small in this city, but that's what they are. And they all have a connection to an encoder that goes out to a server, that goes out to the internet, that serves everybody on their iPads. And that was a development specifically for the pandemic. I mean, there's just no question about it. And so every room is just normalized to an encoder, normalized to an IP address, so it just works. I would say it was the latter in that case. Although, did I get that right? The latter?
The latter.
Yeah, because I forgot which order
you said. The workflow, the gear changes because of the workflow.
There you go.
And the other thing is, you know, people are pushing full HDR out to iPad Pros on the internet.
Absolutely. And they're amazingly accurate too. We've had every colorist before. What we do is we take the iPad, we look at the mastering monitor, and we line up everything. And it is extraordinary how close they are. The new iPads are doing what? Close to 1,000 nits. Close to it, anyway.
Full PQ.
On the Pros. Yeah, well, I mean, you answered my question for me there a little bit, but I would also have to agree. I think every show, to a certain extent, is a little bit reinventing the wheel, especially if it's a show that's going to take place over the next year, year and a half. But I'd say the two biggest instances where we're noticing a lot of the hardware being dictated by the creative needs of the show are around, one, performance. The Mac M1s are very, very fast and optimized specifically for, you know, a lot of After Effects heavy workflows. I just have one. I just got one myself, so I can attest. It's a significant improvement. I'm not sponsored by Apple. But in addition to that, I'd say, you know, further to the iPad comment, you know, we also have a major feature in production right now that's doing HDR dailies and viewing those dailies on iPad Pros. You are right with, you know, monitoring and calibration. That's actually a call that we get quite a bit. I think that there's more that we could do probably on the, you know, on the vendor side to hopefully make some of that HDR process a little bit more clean, I will say. But I think that there's a lot of variables with monitoring and you know, working on a Mac is easier if you're on a new Mac because it's got the nice new displays. But if you're kind of building your own system, it's a completely different beast. Yeah.
And that's one of those things that's also been driven by the pandemic, the iPad viewing. It's not something we've ever thought about before. JZ.
Yeah, about hardware, and the difficult part is how quick hardware becomes obsolete. So financing the hardware is difficult over time. So another example, the other shot we did with the Saudi Arabian daughter, or the daughter of the Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United Emirates. So she filmed in Dubai, that project, and she obviously, they have enough money. They needed the biggest sensor available, which is the Blackmagic 12K camera. Barry Gosh, I saw him earlier. He was editing in the cloud as well, sitting in Hollywood, and we couldn't get the dailies done for that camera because the encoder we used at the time couldn't handle it. And I offered, okay, I suck it down from the cloud, put it to my MacBook Pro, render all night because it's 12K and I only have a little MacBook Pro, but I volunteer and do this. And then Amazon said, no, we give you via the Nimble Studio in the cloud a machine and just tell us what you want. And I said, I want the biggest and fastest and the most NVIDIA cards in it possible. So they gave me this machine and I thought, okay, I create my Resolve recipe to create the renders would have been ASUS EXR files, 4K EXR files. So I pressed the button and watch a movie and come back. But it was so amazing fast. It was like speed of light that I rendered this 12K raw footage into 4K EXRs. And that machine must have cost $80,000, I guess. But I used it only for 15 minutes and never saw it before and never saw it after. So that's unbeatable. So I guess the range is if you use the machine every day 24/7, you want to own it. But if you use it only for 15 minutes a week, then you want to have it in the cloud. And then there are all issues, all kinds of issues in the cloud. You don't know how much it really costs to upload, to hold, and to download. It's very suspicious to me. It could be three easy numbers, but it's some very complex, they use words I never heard before. It could be that I don't speak English. Perhaps in German it would be easier, but it's so difficult for me to understand how expensive the cloud is. I have no idea why. I have good ideas about technology, but I don't know how much it costs. Yeah.
You're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah,
that also has been one of the big challenges out there. Yeah. It's a variable that we just don't necessarily understand. And you're right, it's how much you're going to use that. So $80,000 machine amortized over 3 years. I mean, you're going to take a tax break on that because it's part of your, you know, deductibles. And there's a certain amount that you know that costs you. But if I only need it for that 15 minutes or that, you know, half an hour, you know, a week, that also then changes. That's where you have to have a little discussion with your tax advisors. And they tell you that, oh, that's operational expense. We'll take that out of your full taxes this year. It's not you don't get a third of it. You get all of it. So that becomes a different discussion there,
Was that a daily or was... Was it dailies that you were having to deal with?
Yeah, it was dailies, yeah. Processing only.
Well,
yeah.
That's different, though. I mean, that's unusual nowadays to put full res stuff up in the cloud. I mean, the workflow that Frame.io is doing is interesting. That's, I think, going to be the most disruptive thing. And all credit to Frame.io and that group for doing that. But I think that's going to be democratized very shortly.
Yes.
That camera to cloud,
exactly. I mean, the idea is so great, and it just deserves more companies dealing with it. And that's going to, I think that's going to be the most disruptive thing in the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, and the other piece there is, you know, Jay-Z experienced it. He tried to bring those out of the cloud, process them, and put them back up. And there's time to bring them down. There's cost to bring them down. Then there's the time to do this, and then there's the time to put them back up. If you start in the cloud and try to stay in the cloud, that's going to change your value proposition. Instead of going out, do some work, and then out, and then do more work, and then out, if you're staying up there, that changes the entire value proposition. Then you're looking at, okay, how do I move data between buckets in my cloud or between different clouds, multi-cloud workflows? Certain things work in Azure. Certain things work in AWS. Other things are, you know, Google Cloud or like our friends who are on the floor, Seagate Live. There are different ways to move things.
Well, people are shooting 1 terabyte a day. I mean, this is craziness to think that you're going to put a terabyte up in the cloud using your phone or whatever connection.
Yep.
I mean, that's why the whole concept of camera to cloud is so great, because the proxies are so relatively light, but the quality of the proxy is only getting better and better as development goes. You know, so it's acceptable. I'd say acceptable. You know, when you're doing dailies and you're doing critical dailies, as we have done for the last, I don't know, 20 years of digital workflows, people want to scrutinize those dailies. And if they see stair-stepping on the background, you know, because there's some gradient that didn't work, they call you up, you know. So that's the key to me is can we do this camera to cloud stuff and also maintain the kind of high integrity that we have about the image itself?
And good, for what it's worth, just on that point, I think competition in the camera to cloud market is actually a good thing. I don't know if the rest of the Frame.io team would agree with me on that. Yeah. I hope they would. You know, we're not the only team that is doing camera to cloud, but I think the way we're looking at it is bringing in a partner ecosystem of supporting partners to help that maturity progress. We've just announced at NAB partnerships with Colorfront, with Palmfort. You know, we've got several other hardware partners with, you know, Sound Devices and Aton, where there's, you know, that auto syncing that's capable of syncing all of your video and sound in the cloud. And I think, you know, it's in terms of scrutinizing dailies, I think, you know, part of that is going to evolve as camera hardware does. Teradek has a new solution called the Serve unit that does the 4K HDR dailies, which I think is a good step in the right direction. But I think we are moving towards the 2030 vision of where, you know, all of the media is going to live in the cloud and everyone is just going to come to the cloud. And I think I definitely subscribe to the idea that removable media will cease to exist in a relatively short amount of time. So I think we've got to figure out kind of how do we take the steps we need to take right now to avoid the zigzag back and forth in getting your media in and out of the cloud. That's the biggest challenge in front of us today.
Yeah, the 2020 has skewed the 2030 vision.
Yeah.
It's going to happen sooner than 2030, because we went through a technological revolution as the result of the pandemic because we had to.
But it all comes down to bandwidth, ultimately. I mean, it's cloud schmoud. I mean, it's bandwidth. If you don't have bandwidth, you don't have cloud. It's really that simple to me.
That's true.
That's why even the 40 megabits that we're talking, you just mentioned the 4K HDR, that's 40 megabits. It's not terribly much, but it's a lot, you know, to upload. So three megabits, it's kind of on the edge, but it allows you to work. And then you can replace the dailies if necessary. The claim on the Teradek codec is that you don't have to replace the dailies, but still you have to get the stuff to the cloud. It's all about bandwidth, ultimately. Bandwidth is king. Like content is king, bandwidth is king. That's the true king.
And that's what's going to be where getting your storage and your data to where your processing and editorial needs to take place. There's a gap that's going to be there.
So, and there's also the question, do you measure your bandwidth at 3 a.m. or at 3 p.m.? So sustainable bandwidth is the key. Yeah.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, you know, I just looked at my phone. I don't have ultra wideband in this room. I have a 5G phone from Verizon, but I don't have ultra bandwidth here. If I did, I'd be outperforming the hotel Wi-Fi. That's just plain and simple. And we get to the point where all of our devices can be individually connected that way. We no longer have all the faucets into one sink and just one drain to get to the internet. That's the piece that I think is going to change there. Eventually, we will get to the point where secure wireless is going to be able to give us some of this bandwidth that we've been...
Aha. There's my other story. So in the German Navy, I was Überwasserwaffenleitelektroniker. So I operated the radar and other antennas and everything. And we always took care that transmission, sending and receiving really works well and measured all kinds of parameters so that the cannon is pointing into the right direction. So when I'm now today on a movie set and we test and rehearse, like the HPA 2019, we did a live camera to cloud frame IO demonstration. We had a tracking system from
Moses. Stipe, NCAM.
One of those, exactly. We had one of those tracking systems and everything worked to perfection. We had wireless sound, wireless video, wireless everything. And then the bloody 600 HPA members came in. Everybody has a laptop. Everybody has a cell phone. Everybody switched everything on and it jammed everything. Nothing did work anymore. And we had to move transmitters and receivers together that they were only 6 feet apart. So it's really amazing how we have to now have a specialist on set who looks at the waves and defines who uses which frequencies. That's yet another piece of science we have to take care of. Yep.
So we've got 5 minutes left before we get the hook. So let's get into our main challenges facing you today and what have you been doing to overcome them. So this is the lightning round. Main challenges, Jay-Z.
Yeah, main challenges is still to get 200 people into one room. And the HPA tech retreat was amazing. Everybody was safe. Nobody got COVID. But then I went to CinemaCon and NAB, and we get more and more cases. So the main challenge is to get rid of this pandemic. And then I think world peace is the other main challenge what we deal with at the moment. Yeah.
Technical challenge, yeah.
No, it's still, I'm a total believer of the cloud, but I bandwidth is the main challenge, I would say, yeah.
Bandwidth?
Yeah, I would also agree with bandwidth, and I would also agree with cloud as well. I think we're in that early adopter phase of who are going to be the pioneers that are really going to warmly adopt a lot of cloud-centric workflows and pay the pioneer tax. So if I had to place my finger on that, I'd say cloud first readiness.
My biggest challenge is my golf swing. It's I've been sculling constantly and I can't figure it out. I've had people look at my golf swing. Oh, you technical, I'm sorry. Although I did hit a good drive yesterday. Okay, so technical challenge. I don't know. There's so many. To just put your finger on one would be almost impossible. But managing the bandwidth is a big deal. For our remote center, just so everybody knows, we actually have two cables coming in. I guess I don't know why I say cables, but we have two services coming in, one from Santa Monica and one from downtown LA. And the purpose of that is to make sure that there's redundancy. And I think that's one of the challenges, actually. Is redundancy to make sure that the experience of post-production is transparent to the viewer. And that's where we focused, is making sure that every piece of equipment is redundant, whether it's hot swappable drives, whether it's redundant power supplies, controllers, all the way down the line to bandwidth. we have redundancy.
Resiliency across the entire...
Exactly.
So
The experience has to be transparent, otherwise it will just fail.
It has to be similar to what everybody's... Similar or better to what everyone's been experiencing. So I see one of the big challenges going forward, supply chain. And we're talking about cloud, so why am I talking about supply chain? Has anyone picked up their AWS console and asked for some heavy-duty GPU instances and been told to justify it? I have. There's a supply chain issue in the cloud today, too. They're short on resources because everyone, and not just in our industry, has jumped into the cloud full bore. So that's one of the challenges that is out there today. Supply chain in terms of getting that sort of stuff and just good old-fashioned stuff stuck on boats. We talked to some people at NAB, and you know, there's equipment that's given 1 year lead times. 1 year. So that becomes a little bit difficult in, okay, how are we going to get certain things accomplished? And you know, in our business, we live in the world of workaround, so we make it happen by hook or by crook. But I think that's going to be one of our biggest challenges today.
I agree.
And with that, we've run out of time. So my apologies to Matt Damon. Larry, Morgan, Jay-Z, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow KeyCode Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV, broadcast, and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.